Welcome. It is the Ski Bomb Podcast. Yes, it is us. We are live. And these are your pals, Mario and Brian. Mario, what's up?
Hello, is this on? Like, I almost forgot how to speak and talk on a podcast. What the hell?
Oh, yeah, I said it. It's episode 333. I don't know if I even said that before. That's just how out of practice we are. Yeah,
the threes. The triple, triple.
The triple. It's like half of 666, too, which, you know, whatever. Whatever that.
So this is, instead of Satan number, this is the angel number, right?
This is half a Satan. It's like, you know, half when you order like a half a rotisserie chicken, it's like a half a Satan.
Which, give me half Satan and a Coke, right?
Half a Satan with a little bit of chimichurri sauce, please.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Chimichurri is good on anything.
It is. Now, we said that we would not be as consistent this summer, and we are proving that to be true, as you can tell. You know, we're going to get things back in order in the fall. Don't you worry. But yeah, things have been a little bit crazy, which is also what I'm going to talk about in the main topic today, because I did a Go Ruck challenge. For those who don't know what that
is. Go Ruck yourself.
Indeed. We'll talk about it in the main topic. I'm excited to share what I trained for, what I did. It was pretty badass. It was terrible in the moment while I was doing it. Glad I did it, though. But again, we'll get to that in the main topic. Thank you so much for listening. We do appreciate it. Check us out, skibumpodcast.com. We are on the socials, X, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Untapped. We're at skibumpodcast. If you want to send us an email, you can do that too. skibumpodcast@gmail.com. We're on Patreon. Hey, you probably don't think we're worth supporting. I mean, I don't blame you for the last 2 months. I totally get it. But yeah, we're a ski podcast and it is June in the Northern Hemisphere. So, you know, you got to cause a little bit of slack.
Chuck a buck our way.
You could still go to patreon.com/skibumpodcast and be part of this pre-greatness podcast. Because we know, and you know, that this will be big, huge, tremendous, amazing going forward. We would love you to be part of it. So check it out. Also, 10,000.cc. Athlete-led design. Test, iterate, repeat. Their whole mantra is better than yesterday. At the heart of 10,000 is the idea of pursuit in business, fitness, life, and skiing. They believe in moving forward with a quiet dedication to constant improvement and to becoming just a little bit better than you were yesterday. If you go there, you can use the code BSCHNEIDER15, BSCHNEIDER15, 15% off. I'm not wearing any of their stuff right now, but I love their interval shorts. They got some new cool colors like Kona Blue that's coming out. I need to order a pair of those.
Kona Blue. It just sounds good.
They have the best joggers ever. They're super comfortable. I love them. I think you will too. So check it out. Mario, it's been a few minutes.
Can you pronounce them joggers? Is that?
They do have, I believe it's called jogging. Yes. It's this new trend. Now, it's been a while, but I think we can figure this out. Let's kick this off the way we always do.
It's time for Au Pray Today.
You can figure that out.
Not Au Pray yesterday.
So,
not Au Pray tomorrow. Au Pray today.
It's Au Pray today. So this is empty. This was a weed drink. That was my after work weed drink of rage. So I have one of those weed at the end of a big work day. Rage. And today's a Friday. Yeah, this was a bad work week. Just a lot of shit went on. Of course, people don't do their job. So you got to pick it up, right? Somebody's got to do it. So you kill it at work, then you kill it on the podcast, and that's how we roll. Do your goddamn job. We kill it on the mountain. We kill it everywhere. So you got to come home. You got to ease it out. Do I smack somebody? Do I drive in road rage? No. I come home. I have my nice weed drink of rage. Calms me the hell down. And then I get on with my night. See, it's just good. So I went for a find your happy place. So today I decided, let me go back to where we came from. Nice little cube in a glass with some brown liquor. And that liquor would be a little bit of the bullet.
Bullet to the dome. You know what's so funny? I was actually thinking about this recently. We used to basically drink a bottle of bourbon a weekend when we were doing our Mount Snowhouse. Yeah. And it's not like we would drink shit bourbon. And it wasn't even like shit bourbon. It was always like really good bourbon. Like I was looking at, you know, some of like the like empty like things that I still have floating around for some reason. I have all these like empty Blanton's bags. Blanton's is like impossible to get now, and it's like $80, $100 a bottle. We used to just drink it like, eh, no big deal.
Yeah, it's messed up.
I love the little Blanton's horse on top, and I used to collect them, just have them. And then it was one day I'm like cleaning out. I'm like, the fuck am I saving these for? Let me throw them out. Like, I should have kept them because like there are people that are collecting those and collecting the bottles, the Blanton's. So like, I need every type of Blanton. I'm like, but you're enjoying it? You're drinking it? Like, no, I want every bottle. And I'm like, yeah, that's why like I don't like you anymore. Because you got to drink
some hoarder nonsense. Yeah. Right? Yeah, we used to drink like all these really good bourbons. Like, it was nothing. Like, we would just like plow through them. And now I'm like, wow. Like, I don't even want to think about it. Like, the amount of money.
What, Woodford Reserve?
Woodford. We. Yeah.
Angel's Envy, Whistle Pig, Special Whistle Pigs. Like, it was all...
We drank that bottle of Whistle Pig in one session at the hot tub.
Yeah, and it was like, we get down there as what, like the Vermont version or whatever, and we're in the liquor store, and I'm like, yeah, fucking, I want to buy it. And I'm like, yeah, we'll have a little bit, and maybe we'll share a little bit. Just kind of, you know, I'll take the rest home, right? Fucking thing was gone like that night. Because we're just, this is how we roll.
Three of us drank it at the hot tub. Like, we killed the bottle at the hot tub.
How do you enjoy your bourbon? The hot tub.
Yeah, just, shout out to the Pinnacle Hot Tub. That was, I think they've actually demoed it and are putting a new one in. That was the greatest après spot on earth.
I can't believe it was legal. Let's put it that way.
I mean, it didn't seem legal.
There's a bar in a hot tub. Like, there's a room with a hot tub and a bar. Like, that's all it was. It wasn't like a spa or like a pool area or like, I don't know, like a resorty kind of. It was a hot tub with a bar. That's all it was.
It was just like perfect. It was magical. Perfect. It was great. They had like all the neon ski signs from the 80s. Like, it was just, it was perfect.
It was Hot Tub Time Machine. That's for sure.
I just, yeah, it was wonderful. But anyway, here we are now drinking.
But yeah, when I started drinking more bourbon and Bullet came out, I was like, oh, let's do a little Bullety Bullet. So
even Bullet's not cheap anymore.
No, this used to be the cheap one. It was like, oh, what are you going to mix a drink with? I'm going to use Bullet because it's cheaper. Now it's like they're all pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good price now. So I had this other one. This is what I was going to show you. So I got this one at Total Wine & More. They were having a sale. So I was like, Lone Hand Whiskey.
Tennessee.
Now, it wasn't bad, but I tell you what, this shit was strong. It was hot. So my wife and I, we drink this in our tea at night. So not that we're alcoholics. I'm just saying, if you did want to have tea at night with something, this kind of,
gotta sleep.
Know, good price point for putting in the tea. That's all I'm saying.
Does it come with your Bullet? Does it come with earplugs? Because y'all probably just saw in wood after drinking that in your tea.
Just out. Just falling asleep, like watching Instagram videos, is out. That happens.
It's your sleep apnea machine after that, you know.
King.
Like a king.
Like a king. Yeah, there's been a lot since we podcasted. I mean,
lots going down.
Cruise, you did your Bruck thing. Like, there's a lot of shit that went down.
There's a lot, yeah. We barely had time to recap, but you know, we got all summer. We got time. Don't worry. But we're taking care of this today. Like, this is an important mission one right now to get this done.
Oh yeah.
And speaking of important missions, I don't even know why I'm drinking this. I got to be perfectly honest. I'm trying to keep it light. I had a glass of wine with dinner. I had steak. Had thunder and lightning storm going on. I was making steaks on the grill. It's Father's Day weekend. I'm doing like a pre-Father's Day kind of tribute to myself. Bought a nice fat ribeye steak. Had it on the grill.
Nice.
Had wine with that. Then I had to like help get the kids to bed. It's been a long day. I still have to go on a work deployment call tonight. This is how dedicated to the game I am. We want to get this podcast done. At 11:30 tonight, I have to go on a goddamn work deployment call. Patreon.com/SkiBumPodcast. If you want to help Brian and Mario never have to go on a deployment call again, you can help us make that happen.
Get Brian out of work.
Get me out of work.
Help Brian get out of work.
So one of the reasons why we've been podcasting in a while is there was one weekend a few weekends ago that my wife was away with her sister for her sister's 40th birthday. They were away in the Hamptons. They did a big girl thing. And after that, for some reason, my wife is always the one that comes back with all the shit nobody wanted. And No, which is actually, it's usually a really good thing. So yeah. She brought back all of these like hard seltzers, and I like me a hard seltzer here and there, you know, they're nice. And then she came back with this one. I'll tell you what I do, man. Two chicks the same time. So this is two chicks, whiskey, spicy, ginger, and orange cocktail. It is a sparkling new fashioned. It's not an old fashioned.
A lot of flavor in that thing.
There's a lot of flavor going on here. And it's only like a 5%er. So, you know, it's not like a regular old fashioned where, you know, you'd be ready to get a little rowdy after one or two of them. There's a lot of spicy ginger flavor. That's what I got to tell you about this thing. I'm not getting a ton of orange because there's just so much ginger flavor in here.
How's that compare to Elk Blood?
Dude, I had an Elk Blood this afternoon because it's one of those days.
One of those days. You have your liver chips too?
I don't have any liver chips today. No, I took a hiatus because I was eating all that. I smoked a brisket last week, so I still have a little bit of brisket left over. So I've been just gnawing on that.
Nice.
Delicious. But yeah, this is, you never had like a whiskey and ginger?
Yeah.
It's like a fun drink. You know, it's nice and easy. Jack and ginger kind of thing. This is just like, it's kind of like that, but it's just all ginger and like barely any whiskey. And, you know, we're whiskey connoisseurs. We like our bourbons. And
that's a light pour on like a whiskey ginger.
This is like
sailor ginger or whatever.
Yeah. This is like an 18-year-old's birthday party ginger with like a just like a little tiny like a Utah flick of whiskey. So
a little bit of a Bill Cosby, but not much. the pre Cosby.
That's
the warming up to the Bill Cosby. Just saying.
Yeah, not even going there. But
little Zimazam. Yeah.
What I'm actually thinking about is putting a little more whiskey in this, and I think then we'd be in a pretty good spot. But
I think you got to do that. I think
that's, two chicks, man. Two chicks.
Two chicks, no dicks. Just two chicks.
Yeah. But I mean, there's a couple different flavors. I think my wife brought back like a cranberry, like a, what's it? Like a cranberry vodka kind of thing. They have ones like that. They had some other one.
So let me ask you flavor. That. You go out, you're playing golf with your buddies, real manly time, whatever. Do you reach into your bag, your cooler, you grab out one of these two chicks and pop that open? Or do you kind of wait till you're kind of in the privacy of your own home?
Well, usually you'd be pulling it out of your anus is where you'd be storing this can. If you are a proper male two chicks customer, that's when you'd be storing it. You're just like,
you know, I want to be totally politically correct and transparent here. Like, you're losing your man card if you pull one of those out some places.
The slim can makes it nice and accessible, which is
wonderful. So if I go to a football game, will most venues sell that there? Maybe, actually, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not terrible.
Hey, as long as it tastes good.
I mean, I should be more embarrassed about this can, but I'm not. Goddamn, well,
that's where you put it in the koozie. You gotta have a little can koozie.
Stealth. Covered up. You gotta go. Love these Yeti coldsters are the best. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Throw them there. Nobody knows what it is.
Two chicks at the same time, man. If I were a millionaire, I'm pretty sure I could hook that up. Well, not all chicks are into money. Well, the kind that would double up on a dude like me are.
That's it.
Point. That's from
it's better than drinking a Bud Light, right? Oh,
that's
how to say it.
There you go, right?
Let's say it. It all circles back together. How do you kill a successful brand? They found a way to do it.
Get woke. Chicks at the same time.
Yeah. Get woke, go broke. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying my two chicks here.
Man.
Speaking of enjoying things.
Let's go to ski news.
Now, up here in the northern hemisphere, it is summer. It's getting hot. But if you are in the southern hemisphere, specifically Chile, the Chilean ski resorts woke up this morning. We're on Friday the 14th with a large storm dumping huge snowfalls onto the mountains. According to La Prava's social media, they've seen over 160 centimeters of accumulation at the base of the mountain, or just over 5 feet. Valley Nevada was reporting 4.5 feet of snowfall in the past 24 hours and a whopping 5.1 feet over the past 48. The season snowfall totals has reached over 11 feet. Their Instagram team shared a before and after of the storm yesterday. Ski Portillo, meanwhile, has seen 3.7 feet of snowfall in the past 24 hours, bringing their season total to 10.2 feet. Shaping up to a deep season for Chile and South America. So the Andes are getting pounded, which is awesome.
Wow.
And, you know, like, I'd love to be at the point in my life, you know, where you're like, you know, like everyone's getting ready for like Father's Day and graduations. And it's like, yeah, I'm going to South America and going skiing.
Like, that's like, well,
that's where I want
to hang out and wait for the storm, right? Like, that's the big thing. Can't just go.
It's a tough one.
You gotta go and hang out. Like, I don't know.
South America is tricky in that regard. Yeah, it's very feast and famine-y based on, you know, the folks we've talked to. But yeah, that's it is definitely a feast right now if you were down there.
Yeah, that looks pretty. Those pictures are awesome.
Oh, I know, it looks great, right?
Piles of snow.
I love the before and afters. It just looks like a different place.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Definitely got to go. Yep. Like, but when you hear about it, it's too late to get there. That's just it.
That's the rub, man. You got to be, you got to have like the Doppler 5000, like ready to go. You got to know like 2-3
days. You got to have your own airplane and just blow that shit up. Like, fire up the bird. We're going.
That'd be pretty cool to have like a, some sort of dedicated 20 person communal private jet. It's like, hey man, we are the powder hunters and we're going to make 2-3 stops and then we're heading to wherever the most pow is. Like, wouldn't that
be even better? Having your own damn plane and doing whatever the hell you want and be like, we're flying in, get the chopper ready at the airstrip. We're going to chop her in and we're going to drop right in and ski. That's really like what we want to do.
Being like a skiing A-team. Like, you got your pilots. Right. But they got their van. Like, you got one. You got everybody. Guy making accommodations. That would be great.
Like the Tony Stark of skiing. You just be like, get this shit going. You got little drones. You got everything going on. Like, everything hooked up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, at that point, to be able to make your own snow. Like, if you could just, like, you have your own cloud seeding operation. Just make snow whenever you want it.
Do that, Rich. You own your own ski resort. You do whatever you want.
It's a beautiful thing. Like, imagine if you were like Bill Gates instead of doing all the dumb things he does. Like, wouldn't you just be like focusing on like more skiing?
Zero charity, all skiing, or skiing charity. Change the world through skiing.
You need the tax write-off. So you got to have it set up as like an LLC or like a nonprofit. But yeah, then have it all kind of just funnel into just more skiing.
Yeah. You can buy all the ski areas and turn them into free ski areas. There's zero cost for lift tickets. That'd be nice.
That's giving back.
Giving back. People helping people. All right, so next up we have Jay Peak, Vermont, to reopen for one day of skiing and riding on June 22nd, which is
next weekend.
Next weekend.
I was going to say Saturday.
It's a week or is it midweek? So Saturday, June 22nd, winter will make a fleeting reappearance at Jay Peak Resort in Vermont during the skiers' inaugural solstice sessions ski. So this is the first time they're doing it. We'll see how it goes. But they're saying held in the stateside amphitheater, there's going to be a concert series.
Lazy Bird's going to be there. Park. Lazy Bird and DJ Local Dork.
Local Dork.
So if you are fans of Lazy Bird and DJ Local Dork, I know you're going to be there.
So they built a terrain park. There's going to be – they've been stockpiling a 10-foot-high pile of snow from this past winter ahead of the event. So they're going to move it, shape it, and they're going to make it into a rail garden, skiable rail garden. So this should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I like when they try stuff like this, you know? And I guess they're using the example out in Wisconsin. What is it, Trollhagen? I think they do it out there. And then they're like, you know, it's one of those things, like you try something kind of wacky, and if it works, other places are like, okay, let's copy that, but we'll put our own little local twist on it, which, you know, it's not Some would say you're just copying, but I prefer
it's the flattering, homage. Right?
It's an homage.
The homage, yes.
Yeah. It's like you're covering, so saying, putting your own twist on it.
Exactly. So saying general attendance tickets will be $30 in advance, $40 at the door, and access to the Summer Terrain Park costs $50 for a 1-hour increment, and $100 tickets are available for those who want to ski the 4-hour duration of the summer session.
Damn.
So JP noted that the terrain park tickets are very limited, end quote. I don't know if very that's good or bad.
Limited. Or you can go into the garbage dump in New Jersey and go to Big Snow and do the same thing for a little cheaper, and it'll actually be cold.
Big Snow.
The Big Snow. Only the only ski resort open 365.
Until they have a fire, then it's closed.
Until the next ecological disaster that happens.
That's right. So they just say they have music, the terrain park. So they're going to say musicians play at 11, terrain parks between noon and 4. Food
DJ
and beverage
Local Dork
will be there. DJ Local Dork is going to be there with his Local Dork. It's pretty cool. They're looking for some, they're saying help us pass the J by bringing your unique approach and vibration, which really is what the maker of the event will make the event a success. So that's what they're saying in the press release.
Vibing out. I like it.
Vibing out. Help us pass the J. I like that.
Well,
I'm sure they have a lot of J references. It's probably in their
corporate vernacular. There's a place where you can't pass the J and you can't even pass your car through right now. Large chunk of Wyoming's Teton Pass Road collapses. Unclear how quickly it can be rebuilt. A large chunk of a twisting mountain pass road collapsed in Wyoming, authorities said, leaving a gaping chasm. That'd be a great name for a band. In the highway and serving a well-traveled commuter link between small towns,
girl band, gaping
eastern
chasm.
Idaho and tourist destination of Jackson. Aerial photos and drone video of the collapse of the Teton Pass Road, riven with deep cracks, and a big section of pavement disappeared altogether. Part of the guardrail dangled into the void. The orange traffic drums marked off the danger zone. The road was closed at the time of the collapse. The section that failed first drew attention Thursday when a crack and drop in the road contributed to a crash of a motorcycle. Geologists and engineers who were sent to the area that day noticed that crack and that drop started to move a lot. Stephanie Harsha, a spokesman for District 3 of the Wyoming Department of Transportation. The paving crew temporarily patched the road and traffic began moving again that night. So they don't know when this is going to be fixed. If you see the picture of it, it's pretty crazy what it looks like. It looks like Godzilla just took a bite out of the road because it's right on the bend.
It's weird. It looks like it was built up, the road, right?
Yeah.
To some degree. And then it just kind of went away. So.
Yeah. Yeah. They said that nobody was harmed. No equipment was damaged. So now they're trying to figure out what they're going to do. It's not immediately clear how long it will take to reopen the road, a vital artery for people who live across the border in Idaho and work in pricey Jackson, which is also close to the popular Grand Teton National Park.
They're going to have to make a bridge across that area is what they're going to have to do.
Well, they said that the alternate route between Jackson and the area of Victor, Idaho, goes more than 60 miles out of the way and adds quite a bit to any commute.
Hmm. You know, Elon Musk could probably help that thing. Just bore a big tunnel.
Tunnel in the middle. Yeah.
Tunnel it out. You don't even have to plow that thing. It's great.
Tunnel, helicopters, like this, they're going to have to get a little crazy there. But yeah, it's not cool.
Why don't they just make ramps on both sides? And then if you want, you could just go and do the ramp.
Or like an Evel Knievel jump.
A jump. Evel Knievel style.
Like how bad do you want to get to work?
You're in a car, Dukes of Hazzard. You're in a motorcycle, Evel Knievel.
That's right. That's full send, baby.
Dude, I got my helmet, but it's going to cut like 20 minutes out of my commute. So why not? It's worth it. Totally worth it. I don't know how they're going to fix that thing. They already started saying it's going to be quite a while. It's going to take an extended time. So I wouldn't plan on that thing opening anytime soon. That's for sure.
Yeah. And it sucks. Like, imagine you just like bought a, like a house out in Idaho, and you're like, oh, this is epic. 40 minutes to get to Jackson. And you're like, guess I'm skiing Grand Targhee all winter, which not a bad thing, but.
Boo fucking who?
Boo fucking, yeah, exactly, right?
All right, well, there's other resorts that are having their issues outside of the ones that you can't get to. Vail Resorts is reporting Q3 they missed earnings estimates and the stock declined. So
now, I'd like to just chime in. Didn't we talk about this either the last podcast or the podcast before? When you asked me what I thought of Vail stock, I said I would be selling. I'd be shorting right now. And boom.
Shorting.
If you listened to me, multiple years ago, you would have bought Bitcoin. And if you listened to me last time we podcasted, I said to short Vail Resorts. I'm trying to make you people money. This is not financial advice. You're like
the roaring kitty. You're the roaring kitty of skiing.
The roaring kitty of ski podcasts. That's kind of what we should change our name to. Like roaring ski, roaring skeeties.
Skiing kitties.
Skiing kitties. Like that's kind of us. Kitties. Yeah. Again, this is not financial advice. I just roll the dice and hope for the best. But yeah, Vail had a bit of a rough quarter. But it's just there's interesting notes in this story. Interesting.
Well, I love how they report it, and this is Yahoo Finance still like reported a dismal third quarter. When they start with that, they are getting ready to throw that knife right in your back, man. You better watch. Just the rest of it is you're not going to be happy reading it. Dismal. So
total malarkey across the board.
Dismal. They're saying earnings and net revenues missed the Zacks consensus estimate, and the top and bottom line rose year over year. So during the quarter, they faced unfavorable conditions in North America resorts for much of the 23-24 season. Significant weather challenges were experienced, about 28% lower snowfall. So there's a lot of here's why. It's not really our fault for, you know, whatever. So they're really blaming a lot of the dismalness on the weather. Winter across North America was bad. Frozen orange juice was not a good harvest this year. Yeah.
As long as we had diverse people in our advertising, we should be getting bigger bonuses.
So it counts. That's what matters. Scheme did. But you had diversity. Didn't that make the scheme better? So total skier visits declined 7.7 year over year.
That's
almost a full, we rounded up to 8%, went down.
That's pretty big.
Yeah. So that's 8 out of 100 people said, yeah, I'm not going skiing.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that like the downside was caused by a combination of unfavorable conditions and broader industry normalization post-COVID scenario. What about the fact that everything is still so goddamn expensive and getting more and more expensive? They don't mention that at all.
So they're saying because more places opened up, there's a little bit normalization across the industry where people are spreading their ski visits, right? Well, to your point, Brian, they raised the shit out of ticket prices. So even if you have 8% less, you raise ticket prices a lot more than 8%. So you didn't make it up.
Gas was significantly more. Lodging was significantly more. Like that's a really big part of it.
Damn, food's more.
Yeah.
Just food. You go out to a restaurant.
Well, that's kind of cool. They have the next part of it. And they have the segmented results.
Yeah, following the results, Vail Resorts shares declined 6.2% in the after hours trading on June 6th. In the quarter under the review, the company reported earnings of $9.54 per share, missing the Zacks consensus estimate by 4% in the year ago quarter. The company reported earnings of 8.18 per share. Huh.
So they're still up pretty big from last year, but they're way off what they were estimating.
Oh, yeah. Here's where it is. They break out the different segments. There's mountain segment, lodging.
The lodging was down 6.8% year over year.
Yeah, but dining increased 7.7% year over year.
Well, I think dining was probably up because remember, like during COVID, a lot of stuff was closed.
Yeah.
I don't know if that analysis includes the amount of cost of employees, you know, if there was like a percentage, because again, if you're making $100, but it's costing you 20 to facilitate it, you're making 80. If it costs you, you know, you're making 120, but it costs you 60, only making $60. So I would guess overall they're saying profit. That means that, you know, more stuff was open, more people were buying, which again, everything is so much more inflated. Everything costs so much more. People think they're saving money because they have the Epic Pass. They're not buying lift tickets. Oh, I'll spend a few more bucks on, I'll buy a burger instead of, you know, bringing my beef jerky. You know, right. Like, so there's going to be a little bit of a trade-off there.
Say revenue from ski school and Lyft increased year over year by 11% and 5% respectively. So ski school, 11%. So more people are learning or took lessons, and Lyft tickets, I mean, 5%, even with the increase in price.
Yeah. Well, as someone who paid for lessons this year for kids, holy shit, are they expensive? Like, I had no idea. And again, it goes into the same, you know, argument that if you have a ton of money and it doesn't affect you, inflation, the increasing cost of ski school, food, then you're just going to keep doing your thing. You know, like if you're that 1% person, you don't really care. It's not a big deal. It's just everyone else where that's starting to fall off. I mean, that's, I think you kind of see like cracks in the armor there with how these, like the cost of everything. I felt it big time this year, again, making a couple trips, you know, having, and again, the same thing, but I did on the Icon Pass, you know, I had my lift tickets taken care of. So I'm like, oh, I'll get some food.
You have kids, man. Like, kids are expensive, but dude, it's, you like, gotta do stuff with them. It adds up.
$26 for chicken fingers, you know, something like this drink would have been like $14 at the bar on the mountain. And again, you're like, well, I didn't pay for a lift ticket, so, you know, whatever, I'll just get it, no big deal. But, you know, again, it adds up.
And that's where they get you. I didn't really pay for a lift ticket. You did already. You prepaid for that thing. Oh yeah.
And you go, well, maybe I'll spend the, you know, next time I'll watch myself. We'll bring food with us. But, you know, when you're there, you kind of roll with it, and you just got to pay for it. Kids are starving. It's like, I got to shut these kids up. Let's just go get some chicken fingers, get some tendies.
Tendies. The interesting thing, like, so we talk about lodging. They say net revenues reported were down 6.8% over year over year, right? So now that's just lodging at Vail Resorts. Now, doesn't mean, so that could mean that instead of, you know, you skied at Vail, lift tickets were up, right? So maybe you skied at Vail and you didn't stay on a Vail property, stayed somewhere in town or nearby, right? Like, you wonder if that's how people save money, because
Airbnbs
are usually pretty damn expensive.
It's crazy how much more you're going to spend to stay at the resort. I mean, you go a mile away and it's probably half the price. So,
exactly.
You know, again, people are they try to find ways to save money, because again, at the end of the day, most skiers just want to ski. And, you know, if you have to sacrifice something, traveling an extra 10 minutes, saving half of the money, being able to go on another trip.
Right.
That's where you're going to have to
get in a place. What we usually do, and this is everywhere, if we're going to be someplace for like, you know, more than like 3 days, we try to get something with like a little kitchenette. Cause you know what I do? I make my breakfast. Like, I get up in the morning, make a little eggs, a little oatmeal, something. Right. And then get the hell out the door. I don't need to go to a place and sit down. Like, that takes so long. Just want to eat and get the hell out. You know,
if your accommodations don't have like a buffet breakfast included, you have to do that. I know that's because we did both this season. We did one place we stayed at had the included breakfast buffet. Boom, we're down there eating. Other place didn't. I'm not spending $30 for breakfast. Yeah. At least, but maybe 40.
It's also the time. 40. You got to go find out where it is in town. You got to go, you know, that's to me.
I actually, because we were going up to Killington, I forget if it was blueberry pancakes or waffles. I think it was blueberry pancakes. I made a whole batch just to bring with us. Made them ahead of time, packed them up, brought them with us. We just ate them in the room.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little ghetto.
Microwave or just eat them room temperature. You good?
A little ghetto, but that probably would have cost us at least $50 for four of us to eat pancakes. And it would have taken an hour because you got to drag the kids down there. You got to order. You got to wait. So
the little kids, find those, you know, they take a little longer to get ready. It's a thing, you know. You can save a lot. Save an hour, that's an eternity.
You got to find those hacks. It's the way to go. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. So should have shorted Vail. It's going to be very interesting to see how things play out this fall with the elections, the economy, life in general. Like, how is it going to play out this ski season? I feel like it's had the last four ski seasons, but you know, everyone's been different in its own special way.
There's a lot of stuff because of the election year and because people can't get along with anything on any side of any issue anymore. Everything's controversial. So yeah, hopefully everything will settle down later and in the year we'll get back to some good stuff and we'll be on some ski trips. I'm just waiting for it all to be over.
So I believe in us. Yes, I believe in us. I'm excited for this winter. I'm going to enjoy the summer, but I'm already excited for the season. I got some things rolling around in the old dome.
Yeah, I do got to talk to you because there are some ski trips coming up. There's some ski clubs that seem pretty neat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You remember that little place that starts with a Z? That was a magical.
Yeah. I don't think I can pull that off, but
you can pull that off with two kids. You're a magician, my friend.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I have had family members. Older family members say that they would love to go and would watch the kids while there, which, you know, people talk a lot of shit in May, what they're going to do in the winter. But we'll see how it pans out.
See how it goes.
Yeah. Anything is possible. Staying positive, though.
Yeah.
Speaking of staying positive, it's time to get into the main topic. And this, I'm excited about this because I've been wanting to talk about this for a while. And I didn't even really tell many people I was doing this. This was, so what I did was, it was called Operation Overlord Tough Plus. This is a GORUCK challenge. And for those who aren't familiar with GORUCK, GORUCK is a company. I'm not affiliated with them. I don't get paid by them. They are just a company and they make rucksacks, backpacks. That's how they started out. The owner, the guy who started it, he was former Navy SEAL. And, you know, they always.
Let me ask you for everybody, because I know like I have a relative that's in the military. So a ruck is like a military backpack that they used to pack a ton of stuff. And now it's kind of used for like a workout and bunch of other stuff, right?
Yes. So I actually have visual aids today.
Look at that.
So this is my GORUCK bag. This is the 25 liter GORUCK bag. It's got all like the Molly straps on here. This is actually the badge that I earned from doing the GORUCK challenge. Whoa. The Operation Overlord 80th anniversary of D-Day.
Nice. Again,
super, super thick padded pack. You know, the back is really padded. And it's funny because when I got it, I was joking how there's the grommets down here.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, so you can go and, you know, do squats in the water and then the water won't stay in your backpack. And I kind of laughed like, ha, like I'll never do that. And then, you know, I did this insane GORUCK challenge.
And then you did it.
And I did some stuff. And then in here too, the big thing is you put your ruck plate in. And that's where the fun starts. So
that's the weight plate, right? To get the extra workout.
Bingo. So to make the workout interesting and fun, you got to add your plate. So this is a 30-pound plate, as you may be able to tell from the big 3-0 in here. So what I've been doing, I bought this pack last spring, and I did so because I read a book called The Comfort Crisis, which is by Michael Easter. And if you are a man, I highly recommend, actually anybody, but as a man, I especially recommend it because it's a fantastic book. And the whole thing kind of talks about just how, you know, in life, a lot of us live lives that are not what we want, and we don't get the satisfaction, the accomplishment feels that we are driven, that we thrive on, that we need to keep progressing. And one of the things he did in this book is he met with the creator of GORUCK, forgetting his name right now, Jason McCarthy, maybe? I think Jason McCarthy. And they did this ruck where they would, you know, they're based out of Jacksonville, Florida, and they did this 5-mile ruck in the morning with a 45-pound plate. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. And he's like, yeah, he's like, it's tough because the cool thing about it is, he's like, if you're overweight, if you're fat, it'll lean you out. If you're too thin, it'll put muscle on you. That's the kind of thing these workouts do. And so nice. I've been every day, like when I can, take my kids to school. It's not far. It's only 3/4 of a mile. So it's back and forth, 1.5 miles. But I have a 45-pound plate that I use. So I've been doing that every day for, you know, a year now, and occasionally go for walks wearing that plate. I did a couple hikes. But this particular event, it required a 30-pound plate.
So you had to have at least a 30-pound in there?
You had to show it. Yeah. If you were over 150 pounds, you needed a 30-pound plate. If you were under 150, 20-pound plate. And there wasn't many details. I think
they should reverse that. Like, you got to have a 45 if you're under a certain weight, right?
Well, they have all different kind of GORUCK events. They have one. They have GORUCK heavies where you carry like 100 pounds on you and you go like 2 miles. So they have all different kinds of events.
They got to make it like the strongest man competition. You got to carry an anchor, like an anchor, a bowling ball, like a something, cannonball.
I wouldn't be surprised. But again, this backpack, Super Diesel, had the plate in there. So for this particular one, a dad in my neighborhood, who's, you know, his son plays with, goes to school with my son, and they do jiu-jitsu together and they play together. He sent me a text like early May. He's like, "Hey, would you want to do this?" And of course, in May, I'm like, "Oh, when is it? June 1st? I'm like, "Yeah, sure, I'll do it." And all I could think about along the time is like, "How do I get out of this? Like, what the fuck was wrong with me? Like, why? How am I doing this?" And
he's still serious about doing it too. You're like,
and I thought, he'll bail. Maybe he'll just not want to go, whatever. And as it's getting closer, I'm looking at the event and it's like, this is going to take between 12 and 14 hours. And there wasn't a lot of details in it. Just said it's at least 12 hours. And they're like, a lot of people who complete this actually get a tattoo of the event badge because it's so significant. Huh. I'm like, what the fuck did I sign up for? Yeah. And it's getting closer and closer. And I didn't have all the stuff. Like, I didn't have the 30-pound plate. You needed to have like a Nalgene bottle. You know, those like water bottles or like unbreakable ones. Yeah. Had to have that. Had to have like gloves. Had to have like reflective strips. Had to have like waterproof, like one of those waterproof bags. I'm like, what the fuck did I sign up for? But the funny thing is, it took place in New York City. And I'm like, what are we going to do in New York City? So I'm like, I found out. So it was weird the way it just kind of, I didn't know what to expect, which is probably a good thing. So a couple days before, me and my, my buddy Abe, the guy I was talking about who asked me to do it, he's like, I'm like, how are we going to get there? Cause you know, we had to be there at 6 a.m. on a Saturday. Thank God the guy who was organizing it was like, okay, it was actually changed to 7. So 7 a.m. on a Saturday. Still super early because where we had to go to basically the southern tip of New York City. So I've got my presentation here. So I can actually show, you know, where, give you guys some logistics here. That's what we're talking about. All right. So do you see me here? Okay. So yeah. So here's our map. Yep. So we had to go down here. Now, can I zoom? See, this is what's weird. Okay. I'll zoom in here. Is it zooming in?
It's zooming in.
All right. Cool. So we had to meet down here at the East Coast Memorial. So this is a World War II memorial. Now, this whole ruck was to commemorate D-Day, obviously, which was June 6th, the 80th anniversary of D-Day. And we met here at this memorial, which I didn't even know about. Like, I've biked through here. I take the ferry past here whenever I have to go into work, which, you know, into the offices like once a week. So we had to be here
in the park.
Yes. East Coast Memorial. And the crazy thing is, so 6 o'clock, we had to take an Uber at 5:15 in the morning to get there.
Wow.
We got there about 6:15, 6:30. We were there. A couple guys showed up. There's supposed to be 19 of us doing this. Only 11 showed up. Like, 8 people just bailed.
So they didn't they just didn't show up.
They just straight up bailed.
They didn't even bail the day before. They just like, fuck it, I'm not going.
Didn't show up. Now, there were people from, like, there was a guy who was from Massachusetts. He like got a hotel the night before to do this. Nice. There was one dude who's done 145 of these events so far.
Hmm.
So there was some like some interesting people, and there was only three of us. That was our first event. So the guy gets there, and this was like, now again, I have no military history. This guy was, he was former special forces. We went through this, all these like exercises. We had to pull out our bag, show all of our equipment, make sure we had everything. We had to do like crab walks on the street. We had to run around.
This is to make sure you were fit to do the event.
Yeah. We had to do like 80 jumping jacks, which, you know, two count jumping jacks. Or four, I guess it's four count. One, two, three, four. Yeah. Like 80 of those. Like you're, it's like, again, 7 a.m. You're like, what the fuck are we getting into here? We did this thing called.
Yeah, do this before you actually start the event.
Before we started doing anything, we started having to do all these things. I'm like, what are we, what am I even, what did I sign up for? What did I pay $130 bucks to goddamn do?
See, you got a boot camp and then you get to run around after, right?
So we did all these exercises, and then I got picked as a leader just because I was all the first time people had to be leaders. So I started out. So then it's like, we got to go over to Pier 11 from here. Luckily, I knew where Pier 11 was. It's right here. This is where my ferry to work stops before it goes to my stop.
So you got to try to navigate as well.
Yeah. So interestingly enough, we are in New York City, which if you didn't know, is a very liberal place. And we're carrying a big American flag, and there's 11 of us all marching together. Not marching, but like we're all walking in like formation together.
Yeah.
And we walked over to here, and the cadre, the guy in charge there, he's like, go walk down to Fulton Street, because we were like, we had to kill time. We didn't know why. So we had to go down to Fulton Street, which is over here, which is like where the famous fish market and everything is.
Yeah, Fulton Fish Market.
So we had to go to Fulton, and we had to come back over to here. Ended up being about a mile, getting back to Pier 11. And then he's like, there's a bike path down here also. And he's like, there's the satellite view. I don't know if it's going to make any difference. Oh, there we go. Yeah. So there's like a what's it called? Like a overpass road. The FDR Drive is like a elevated road in that spot. So underneath here, there's a bike path. And then there's like basically the street, and we were doing, we did do 80 squats, push-ups, deadlifts, shoulder presses, and I think one of the exercises there with our rucksacks. Well, some of it was with the pack, some of it was that. So we had to do squats with the pack on. We had to do push-ups on the ground in New York City, just like push-ups on the ground. These, the shoulder press. So you got a 30 pound plate plus your water, your change of clothes, your food, like presses with that, with the backpack. And this is all just kind of getting started. And we didn't know what we were doing, but again, we're at this ferry slips. Like we're going to go on a boat somewhere. And the boat comes. And funny enough, it was the Sea Streak Ferry. Now, that is the same boat that I take to work, the Sea Streak Ferry from where I live.
That's fun.
And my buddy was like, we're going to Sandy Hook, aren't we? I'm like, shit, we're going to Sandy Hook. So basically, basically back to home. Yes, where we were going. And it's funny because so Sandy Hook, I'll show you guys. This is why I got the map out here. So you see all these lines here? Like one of these is actually the we can follow the exact
little route. Yeah.
Route down here. Now Belford is the one that I take it out of. So it's down here. See the Sandy Hook. Yeah, Jordan Belford. Wolf of Wall Street. It's all connecting. So Wall Street's right there. So yeah, we take the Sandy Hook Beach. Now the way they tied the history into it was really cool. So he's like, you know, we're standing at the top of the ferry looking at the back. And he's like, now imagine this. Imagine you're some farm kid from Iowa. You signed up to join the military because you had no money, no opportunity. You were in maybe 4 weeks of basic training, and they shipped you out to New York City. You got to be in New York City for 7 to 11 days before you got shipped out to Europe. He's like, I mean, the experiences you had. And he's like, now look at the boat here back to New York. He's like, granted, you know, obviously the cityscape has changed. Things are different, but this is the last time you are going to be seeing your homeland as you're going out to war. And you're just like, fuck. It just like, it really did hit you seeing that. And now I will tell you, the Sandy Hook boat on a Saturday morning is full of a lot of like
dipshits.
Imagine the person who wants to be in the military and then think of the complete opposite
of that. Yeah.
And now we're all, we had to stand, we had to have our packs with us. And I'm just kind of looking around. And again, I'm not a military guy. I haven't been in the military. I have a new, massively, profoundly respect for them. But also, too, you're looking at, like, I felt like, wait a minute, I'm fighting for you guys? Like, these guys who are just going to hang out and just drink White Claws at the beach? Like, yeah, this is what you're supporting? It was a surreal kind of thing. So, you know, and he's talking about, you know, just the history of the shipbuilding. We listened to this podcast where they're actually doing the actual war reporting from D-Day itself. And he's giving a lot of cool information. So there were 11,000 planes in D-Day. Right now, United's entire fleet is 900. Like, the amount of troops and the amount of armament
of lost life is staggering.
I've been watching all these documentaries about it since then. So I'll just give you another, you know, I got to get off in 23 minutes. So I'm going to keep this relatively, brief. So we took the ferry down here to Sandy Hook. And this is where the ferry comes in. And now, Mario, you remember we did that bike ride.
Rode up there, yeah.
To Fort Hancock, which is over here. And then there's the old barracks, that old
is it like a jail there and stuff too? Like, we walked all around that stuff.
Yeah, we biked all the way up there. So we got there, we had to do some more exercises as we waited, and then they set it up like, okay, we have to meet our contact over here in Lot K. And we had this like phrase, because I was the leader and I had my co-leader. We had to have a phrase and we had to say the word or the sentence. He had to say something back to us and they had to say something to us again. And if everything checked out, you know, we would, you know, have an interaction kind of thing. Huh. Wow. So the rest of us were hiding behind this building right here, waiting for the signal. We all went there and we got a whole bunch of heavy shit we had to carry. Sandbags, armament box, a giant barrel with cinder block pieces in there, like
damn,
water, 40-pound water bags. And we carried all that out to the beach here. And they talked about how what's cool about it is a lot of the terrain that you see here at Sandy Hook was very similar to what Normandy was. But they said Utah Beach more than Omaha. I think Omaha Beach was 300 yards from the water to the end of the sand here, to where all the you know, I guess, I don't know if it was like armaments or where all like the dunes and everything was. This is about half of that. So what we did is, as an exercise, we had to carry all of our shit out here. We had to go in the water with our rucks, run around, and then basically run and sprint as fast as we could out of the water to, you know, where our stuff was, about 150 yards. And he's like, imagine you're, again, like an 18-year-old kid, you're getting off of your transport, you're running for the beach and just being fired at and seeing all these people being killed around you. He's like, that's what it was like. And now if you've seen like Saving Private Ryan or any of those kind of, you know, D-Day reenactments, one thing they show is a lot of people puking. Turns out that night before, the Navy kind of gave this, or not the Navy, I guess all the armed forces that were part of the invasion, they had this huge like send off, and they had ice cream and all this crazy food, you know, like all
like a last meal kind of thing.
Yeah, like a last meal thing.
They knew how deep the Germans were.
Yeah. And they said that's the reason why they always show the puking there. I mean, it's part of it was nerve, but a lot of it was the food they gave them. And they've done some analysis since then. They said the troops were 80% less efficient because of that big dinner they gave them. And instead of them giving them, like, you know, optimized high protein carbohydrates that they would have needed for, you know, being their best self. Which is,
that's crazy.
So that's part of this mission was, is we learned all this cool stuff about, you know, the leading up to D-Day, a lot of the facts. So then we left here, and then we had to go down this road here, this fort road. We had to walk all the way down here. We walked all the way this whole length of Sandy Hook here, which I think is like 8 miles, 8 or 9 miles.
With all that heavy shit?
With all that heavy shit. And we had a couple breaks. And we took breaks, and it was a sunny day. It was nice. It was like 80 degrees and there wasn't a cloud in the sky. So nice. We were baking, and you just walked and we walked and we walked. And then we had to go. So right over here, there's an overpass. We had to go over the bridge, and then we had to go to this lighthouse up here. So we basically, and now you can't really see the topo here, but it's basically, this road is like straight uphill. So after already doing like, I don't know, 8 miles, 9 miles or so, we had to go up this hill to get to here, and we went to the top of the lighthouse. Trying to see if there's any sort of view. I mean, you can see that it's like at the top here. I mean, you can't really get a good view of what it looks like going down there, but went to the top there. We got a little break there after, which was nice, like a half an hour, and talked about, you know, how Eisenhower, part of the reason he got even put in was because it was a political move, because he wasn't like a braggadocious guy. He was really got along with higher ups. Again, a lot of cool background information about, you know, the World War II and D-Day and stuff. So then after that, we went over here to this Hartshorn Park, which I've been to a million times with my family. There's like this this battery over here. They have the old cannons there that were set up for World War II. We looked at those. We walked down this is a massive hill here. We walked down to here, and there's a kind of a pier. Now it's a Saturday, beautiful day. There's all these like party boats, a bunch of boats hang out. It's called like Party Cove. There's like three, nice. Four boats, people drinking, you know, girls in bikinis, yeah. Hanging out. What were we doing? We were doing drills here. We had to jump into the water. It was like the airborne part of it. Like we were parachuters who were landing. We had to jump in the water and like turn and roll. Damn. So we're like jumping in the water here. And this hill, again, it's like a massive hill. We had to, when you see any of those videos, you see the guys with that weird pack they have in the front, the parachuters.
Yeah.
So we had our ruck pack on. We had to borrow a partner's ruck pack, carabiner it to the front. So we had two packs on and do loops around this hill here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So then we walked
up. Everybody doing the similar thing, or did you take turns or what?
We broke into two groups. So one group was doing the jumping in the water, and then the other group was doing the walk around here.
Oh, damn.
So then we had to walk up and around here, this loop. Luckily, we were able to do some extra, like we were able to do push-ups and this thing that our cadre had learned when he was in the military called, he had this, I don't know if it's a sergeant or what, his name was Sergeant Burton, and it's called Burton's Heartbreakers. And it's this move where you grab the ruck plate, you hold it out front, you do a squat with it over your head, bring it down, and do it again, and that's one. We had to do 10 of those after we'd already done like 20 of those throughout the day. And we're probably at about the 14 mile mark at this point. We go up here, we go up this hill. Luckily, because of doing that, we got rid of all of our extra weight that we had to carry. So it was just us and our packs at that point. We walked over here. I think it was was it Grand Tour we took? Let's see. Yeah, it was Grand Tour. Down to Bay, over to Valley, and then was it Valley? Crap. No, it was Miller. Okay. So we went over here, Grand Tour to Peak, over here to the church. We went across the street, down to here, down here, and then over to the ferry slip back over here.
Oh, okay.
So this was back on the ferry. To go back to New York. There was a 7 o'clock ferry we had to catch. So we took, I don't know, it had to be an 8:30. It must have been an 8:30 ferry in the morning, and it was a 7:30 ferry back. And by the end,
someone at night? Like
at night, yeah.
So you were there all day at Sandy Hook, essentially.
Yes. Basically back home.
Started at 7 a.m. and you went all the way basically to Sandy Hook, spent the entire day there, and then went back to New York.
Luckily, the cadre was cool, and he gave us our badges here. And me and my buddy were able to stay here, and my wife just came and picked us up.
Yeah, because I was going to say, you're right there, right?
I'm like, to go, it would have been another 45 minutes back, take the next boat, 45 minutes back here.
To take the boat right back, yeah.
Yeah. So it ended up being 20 miles total that we did.
Damn.
Someone had
their... just walked home from there. Why couldn't you walk home?
Yeah, I know.
Have a little extra.
Dude, my pinky toes, I did this 2 weeks ago, my pinky toes on both feet are still purple.
Damn, it
was my shoes, I think, but it was just like, it was tough. But you know what? Like all of us, like we chat, like everybody chatted with everybody, kind of learned people's stories, you know, like it was just like, it's such a bonding thing. And you know, when guys get together and do something hard, like there is always going to be a bond there. You know, think about like sports teams you were on, or, you know, if you're in the military or police, fire, whatever, like it just creates this, this really cool bond. And it was, it was amazing. Like it really was like when you were done with it, there's, so at this, at the ferry slip here, they have this thing called, I think it's called the sandbox. Here we go. Sandbox at Sea Street Beach, where they have, you know, food trucks and music. And me and my buddy were like, dude, I'm starving. So we ended up just, I grabbed like a crappy $20 like brisket sandwich, which was extremely mediocre, being kind, but it was like
the best mediocre sandwich you ever had, right?
It's just like starving. Like you're just decimated. Like your body is just destroyed. My shoulders hurt for days after that. Cause again, you're carrying this heavy ass pack. My toes hurt for a week. They still don't feel great, but again, they're all bruised and purple, and I lost a toenail. Yeah, seriously. Right.
Damn.
But it was badass though. Like again, the things that you learned about D-Day, the people you met, all, and everyone did it. And one other funny fact is they told you to bring $20 with you in cash. And we learned in the beginning when they were doing that kind of roll call, like check out your stuff, like that's called quitter's cash.
Oh, that's get you back home.
Yeah. So hey, if man, you wanted to,
$20 is $20.
If you wanted to quit and give up, just give $20 and you can just go on your merry way. But no one did. Everyone kind of sucked through it. And I was worried too. Like I'm doing this, like my first time doing it. Like, is everybody gonna be these like giant, like special forces, like 26-year-old dudes? Dude, there was two guys who were in their 60s, like 60, 61 years old.
Yeah.
So I was kind of middle of the pack.
That's cool.
But again, all different kind of guys, like just, but everyone was there to kind of work together and be a team and get through it. You know, it was a lot of fun. Yes. Yeah, it was
pretty awesome.
It was, you know, it sucked a lot of times and you kind of had to dig deep. Like I have like my mantra, you know, I watched all those like Jocko Willink, that good thing he talks about where he's like, got hit injured. Like good. You got time to train and learn something new. You know, like I just had to have a mantra in my head, or like David Goggins, like just staying positive, like just getting through it, like embrace the suck, like get through it.
If you paid more attention to this and kind of knew what you were in for, you think you would have done it?
Probably not. I'd have been like 20 miles. I'm like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah, you would have been like thinking about it, being like, yeah, there's no fucking way I'm doing that. Like I got work the next day. I got like kid. Like there's, you know, you come up with all these excuses and shit that you actually have to do, but like you cleared your schedule because you're like, no, this seems like it's a pretty cool event or whatever, right? And you kind of didn't know much about it until like maybe it was too late, and then you're kind of in. So it's kind of cool. Like if you think about, like, there's a lot of things we talk ourselves out of doing that are so good for us in the long run. You just got to see it through. But because you easily could have been like, oh no, fuck that. I know what it's about. Yeah, I'm not doing that. Right. But
well, that's exactly what that Comfort Crisis books talks about. Mm. And it talks about a misogi. Misogi. Yeah. It's like, it comes from like the ritual purification in Japan, in Japanese. And the way they kind of talk about it in the book is it's like, make this something that's hard to do, that maybe you have like a 50% or maybe a little more chance of succeeding on, and like challenge yourself every year, try something like that. To challenge yourself and to better yourself, to see what you're capable of. And
that's awesome.
It's funny. So that was kind of what, you know, that guy, Abe, he actually read the book too. So we were talking about like, this is our misogi now, let's do this. And it's funny, like now that I've done this, like if you go to GoRuck's website, they have find an event. And the guy who ran this one, he's doing one called the Wilderness 48, which is actually 48 hours. And you're up in the Adirondacks, you're in the woods, and you have to build shelter. You got to do land navigation. You got to start fires. It basically stuff like a advanced Boy Scout thing, which as a man, I feel like I don't have those skills now. And as a father, it concerns me because like I want to teach my kids these things. I want to give them some sort of knowledge, but I need to have it first. So I'm like, this would be a really cool thing to do, to learn all that.
Yeah, I think it's fun to dabble in that, but if you get serious and you do that all the time, you become a prepper.
My body is ready, man. I'm ready for it. I think I'm ready to go on that dark path. Like I'm ready.
You're ready to go. Like shutter out the world, get off the grid.
They have all different kind of events. They have, you know,
no, that was like, pretty cool.
They have one, they have marksman events, like precision rifle events. They have 9/11 nice. Ones they do. Counteractive shooter. Like they have all kinds of stuff.
That's pretty cool. Sounds awesome. I mean, especially when you do things like that and get out of your comfort zone and do something kind of messed up that you're, if it makes you afraid, makes you butt pucker, then it is probably worth doing.
Yeah.
It's going to change your life, right?
They have the heavy challenge for 9/11 where it's 24 hours, 40 plus miles.
Damn.
Yeah. But their whole thing too is like that you do it as a team. It's not about a race for individuals. It's all about doing things as a team together.
So it's funny. You're like saying like, you know, we're in the non-woke, you know, we're in a pretty woke place and we're, you know, with the flag and running, right? Like, and I kind of smiled because this past weekend, like we rode out to the beach, my wife and I, and we're riding up and there's this, for some reason, people had a pro-Israel thing that they had, right? So they're marching and they're going up the hill. And we're like, there's usually, you know, it's a pretty busy, it's a bridge to the beach and it's pretty busy. So they're going up and we pass them. My wife almost hit somebody because they weren't looking. But anyway, we're going up and I'm laughing as I'm going up the hill because it's like at the bottom of the hill and then you get to the top, you know, to the bridge and then you go down and I'm like, I'm kind of snickering. And like, so my wife asked me later, like, what were you laughing about? Like that was a, you know, pro-Israel thing, whatever that, like, it's not a funny thing. And I'm like, yeah, no, I wasn't laughing at that. I was laughing because I got such a fucking sick sense of humor. I'm like, I'm going to get to the top of that hill and there's going to be the pro-Hamas bitches up on the other side. And I'm going to be in the middle. And somebody's going to say, that guy was in the middle of either side. And I'm like, I'm just riding my goddamn bike. Leave me alone.
Well, that's actually what a lot of the, you know, I heard on Rogan, they were talking about a lot of those Facebook groups. They'll set those things up. They'll set up the Hamas event next to the pro-Israel event or the Christian event next to the Muslim event. Like they do that. Like they that's a lot purpose. Of like a lot of yeah. like those troll farms set those that's up.
Crazy.
They overtake those groups and they set up those events. It's like
but they I had saw the, it, dude, and I'm like, Philly? I'm gonna get to this top of this hill. And there was a cop there, like on the meeting. I'm like, there's never a cop there. I'm like, all right. That's why I was like looking. I was like, if there's a fucking pro Hamas coming the other way, I'm in between the pro Israel and the pro Hamas. Like I'm going to get squished. Like it's not going to end good for me.
Did you see in Philly last week, they had like a pride parade and then they had the pro Palestine parade and they were fighting each other. It's like, it's like the left eating the left. Like, it's like you guys just,
it's just weird.
Have it out guys. Have it out.
The jokes and memes out of that were hilarious.
Oh, they were great. Yeah.
It's horrible. Like, I don't want anybody to get hurt. And, you know, whatever your cause, like, it's okay, except if you're, like, for hate, which is the pro-Hamas. So I could say, fuck you guys. How about that?
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought we've talked about it on this before. Like, I never thought in my lifetime I'd see, like, almost, like, pro-Nazi, anti-Jewish stuff out there, like, to the level that it's at. I'm like, that's messed up.
Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And you know, if you want to teach about nonsense, selfish, narcissistic bullshit in schools instead of actually learning about facts and information and history, this is what you get.
Yeah.
And again, but, like I said,
you know,
doing this
event, I gotta say, like I don't want to diminish some of the stuff you said about like having appreciation for World War II and just like our servicemen and women in general, it is a big sacrifice. Like it is, and there are
a lot of people, like if you live in an area where you don't know somebody or you think you don't know somebody who's in the military that served, like even first responders, things like that, like these are people put their life on the line, you know?
I think it's extremely selfless. A lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
Versus a lot of stuff that a lot of this bullshit stuff that we're seeing now in society is all extremely selfish.
Right. And I think the one thing people don't get is World War II. I don't care what country you're in. You could have even been in Germany, in, you know, England, in the US, Canada. There was so much involved. Like if you look at the numbers, they're staggering of how much life was lost. Like you're talking about, you know, a good section at the time, like a good section of your population, like people, like you knew somebody that went off to war, right? Hopefully they came back. A lot of people didn't, you know, and just like, if you watch the, you know, I watch a lot of History Channel stuff and like stuff on World War II. It's fascinating because there's just so massive, like the magnitude. I still can't wrap my mind around the magnitude of like that last battle was, you said over 1,000, right? 1,100 airplanes from the US, right? Or is that total?
11,000 total.
Total, right? Mm-hmm. 11,000 airplanes, right? The number of ships is just out of this world. Number of people is out of this world. Like it's crazy. I mean, look at the statistics. I think, and even, you know, as much as I hate Russia right now, like I think Russia is claiming they lost like, was it 56 million people in that war?
I don't think it was that many. I think that's how many Stalin may have killed.
Yeah, but, that's true.
I was watching, if you watch it, there's a pretty short docuseries about World War II on the front lines on Netflix. And they were showing one part during the Battle of Stalingrad, the Germans who were holed up there in the winter, they saw somebody die and they went and they started eating his organs.
Yeah,
and one of the guys they were interviewing, he's like, that is when everything turned for me. He's like, what have we done? What have we become?
Yeah. 24 million people they're claiming.
Wow. I mean, they were. Million. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a hidden number. Like a lot of that is the push into Russia. Right. Mm-hmm. But like D-Day was like, I mean, Americans, shit, U.S. lost over like almost 500,000 people, UK 500,000, Yugoslavia 1,000,000. Well, they were exterminating them too. That's pretty messed up.
Yeah. It's really worth doing a little research on too. And it really will give you a little more appreciation for what we have here and what it took to get us here. And, you know, things that we should probably focus on a little more than we are right now. So,
you know, events like that are good. Like think about maybe they touched a few people that got a better appreciation for what people sacrifice. Mm-hmm. That's meaningful, right? That maybe gets people to stop hating each other or causes and stuff.
Yeah, man. We're in this together, everybody. Left and right, north and south. Like we are in this together. And the sooner we realize that, the sooner we can start looking at who really we should be fighting, not each other. The people who are kind of pulling the strings.
Well said, my friend.
And I have to get onto a work call.
Yeah.
Now we're going to wrap this up. Perfect timing.
Boom.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We do appreciate it. Check us out, SkiBumPodcast.com. Go to the socials, X, Instagram, Facebook, Untappd, YouTube, at SkiBumPodcast, Patreon.com/SkiBumPodcast. OnlyFans may have to happen, man. We need to go on some more ski trips. So
no butt stuff.
Might be whoring ourselves out. Hashtag no butt stuff. Thank you so much for listening. We do appreciate it. And we'll talk to you guys. See you next week.
Stay high, stay fluting.
See ya.